Good morning. My name is Keegan Rasko, and I'd like to introduce you to Life Downstream. Life Downstream is a radio show where I, a high school student, and my English teacher, Mr. Morgan, go and talk to people from Astoria about their life experiences and the way that those experiences helped them learn outside the classroom. And with that, I'd like to give it to Mr. Morgan to introduce our guest for today.
We're here today with Marco Davis, a local Astorian resident. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
My pleasure.
Marco, we were chatting a little bit before the show about key moments and things that you've experienced in your life that have taught you things. We went way back and talked about a trip that you took right after high school. And I wondered if you could kind of tell us a little bit about this trip. You were 18 years old, you saved up, and you went on your own to Europe for 2.5 months. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, it was amazing. I went specifically because I wanted to change my worldview and what I had always known, which was Astoria, or sometimes Port Townsend for family vacations and stuff. So I saved for 2 years working at McDonald's, and the day after graduation went, and it was kind of a bumpy trip to start with because I had a long layover in Heathrow in London because there were strikes, and so I had to spend 17 hours in the airport and waited for my next flight, and I just remember, like, in our English class that year, I had read Plato's Symposium and about pains for pleasure and everything. And I was just like laughing to myself, like, because I recently just reread my journal from, like, every year I like to kind of pull it out and, like, remember some little things that happened because it was a life-changing moment for me. And I just remember writing in my journal about how, oh, well, it's definitely going to be an amazing trip because I'm already having to suffer so bad and everything. And
What was it like to look back through the journal that you kept on that trip? I mean, is it cringeworthy? Is it, you know, when you read those entries, are you proud of yourself for what happened on
totally.
That trip?
Oh, totally. And it just was so crazy how young I was, too, and how so much really hasn't changed in so many ways as well. And it was just so miraculous, like, getting to see all of the art. I think one of my strongest memories was being in the Sistine Chapel in Rome, and they were exactly halfway done with the ceiling restoration.
Oh, wow.
And so it was just so striking to see the difference and how beautiful it was. And
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did, you know, you said that when you looked at some of those entries, you felt like you were so young. In what way did that trip kind of make you mature, or how did you come back changed after that trip?
Well, I think the biggest part was just learning to travel internationally, being in places where I wasn't familiar with the language, and especially in Italy. But having taken French for 4 years at Astoria High School, it was amazing to me how similar, like, I could understand a lot of Italian spoken to me. And so that was helpful. And I was with my aunt, Tess, who was studying Italian there. And so she was helpful with a lot of that. And, but just navigating around. And I mean, we were on a night train from Nice to Barcelona, and, we were one group of 16 that got gassed and robbed during the night.
Oh my gosh.
And I just remember when we were on the train, like, the door to our cabin opening, and there was a flashlight, and then it closed, and then it happened again, and there was, like, rustling around, but I couldn't open my eyes or move. I was just, like, so heavily asleep, and my aunt never sleeps, and she, like, when we got to the border of Spain and we were woken up, she'd wrapped her bag around her ankles, which was taken, and Whoa. So she didn't have her passport or her traveler's checks or anything. And so we couldn't cross the border into Spain. Conveniently, I had listened to her and always wore my money belt and kept my ticket and passport and everything next to me at all times, nice. Which is still something that I do. You know, yeah. It's just, can't be too safe. But so then we had to take a train up to Paris to go to the American Embassy and stuff. And then we got to stay at her friend Victor's apartment. It was like this glamorous place. And I mean, it was a total change, but we stayed calm through the whole thing. Like, I remember going through all the garbage cans in the train and actually finding her notebook that had all of her traveler checks numbers written down and her Whoa. Credit card. So like, we were able to get everything canceled and reimbursed. So it's,
I feel like that type of thing for a lot of people could be like a trip ending ordeal, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just that ability in that moment to stay calm, start going through the trash cans, you know, exactly. And respond in just this really pragmatic way, I think is so key, you know? And
it is.
And I, you know, if people are listening and they haven't done a lot of traveling, obviously, you know, these types of things don't, you know, kind of mark every trip and are a part of every single trip. But if something like this blows up and happens in the middle of a trip, that type of response, I think, is the way to tackle it. Just, yeah. Okay, what's the next thing that I need to deal with to address this? And, you know, what's the next task that I gotta go to the embassy. I gotta take this train here. And, but as an 18-year-old, I could imagine that must have been scary.
Oh yeah. And it was so funny because the Spanish were blaming it on the Italians and the Italian. It was just like everybody was like, oh yes, that's what they do all the time. But we found out that the key to traveling via a train at night is to always crack your window so that when they spray the knockout gas in there, it doesn't get trapped. It goes right out.
Good to know.
No.
I'm the advisor for the travel club at the high school, and I need to pass this tip on to them.
Yes, that and money belts. Yeah, they are really a lifesaver.
I still to this day use a money belt whenever I travel and keep my important stuff, you know, close to me and all that. But
does that make us nerds? I think this responds.
There's no way to make them look cool, right? You just have to embrace it. Although fanny belts are coming back, right? So
they are. I know, it's true. I have three of them.
we chatted a little bit about big kind of changes and shifts that you've noticed since growing up in Astoria, and I thought it was really interesting. Where, you know, hearing this story about your 40th birthday, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about this, just this moment where drag shows and events where people can kind of be out and open really started taking off in town.
My 40th one happened at the Columbian Theater in 2009, because I just turned 50. And it was an invitation only party, and I had asked a couple of my friends to learn a few dances, and so I put a couple numbers together, and it was designed as a lip sync and karaoke competition, and so I wanted to have my friends come and perform with me, and of course, it like ended up being that most of them just wanted to like sit and watch a show, you know, and stuff. And so my friend Jane and Dave Roberts got up and sang a duet, and they were so cute. Jane actually used to work at the high school well, and longtime Astoria residents. And then Deke Guidi got up as well and did New York, New York, and of course won the competition. And It was a real fun night, and people were just kind of excited about it and said, you need to do another show, you need to do another show. So I held auditions, and we put a show together called The Event, and we did it. I usually did the shows like around my birthday in January, and then we always did another one on Regatta weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I had like 12 people that came to the auditions and wanted to learn dances and stuff. And we always did a little bit of a variety show. And so there were people that would be singing some numbers as well and to karaoke tracks because it's easy. Mm-hmm. But then we have started adding in live musicians as well. And then we did another one called The Eruption after that. And each show just kept getting like larger and larger. And that was back before Daylight even came onto the scene. And I would do performances and because sometimes I liked to perform authentically, I would always use female vocals because they always had the right pronouns for emoting emotions and stuff. Mm-hmm. So even though I wasn't doing drag, it always have like this twist to it. And, you know, sometimes I'd put a dress on or wear a wig or something, but it was always just guy drag. Mm-hmm. And then when I was going to massage school, I got this wild idea that, well, gosh, everybody's really into doing these shows and I want to challenge us. And so I want to start a drag revolution called Dragolution. And everybody was gung-ho about doing it. So, and most everybody just got new heels and like we started
everybody stepped up their game.
Yeah, they stepped up their game and we had walking lessons. And
so would you say then that Daylight, you know, you perform as Daylight, did Daylight grow out of having these shows, that grew out of that 40th birthday party that kept growing and growing?
Yeah,
or
totally.
Did Daylight kind of
it a little bit in 94 when I was living in New York? That was kind of like the first time she manifested in me as an adult. You know, mm-hmm. she came out a few times when I was a kid and I would put my grandma's, she was a ballroom dancer a lot and she had these red high-heeled shoes that she would always wear. And so when I was little, I would always put that on in her furs and like dance to Lawrence Welk in her living room and stuff. So I always say that's kind of when Daylight first came onto the scene. But in 2012 was when I named her. And actually, she had her debut in New Orleans for Halloween that year.
Really?
Because that was always when I would let her out. When I moved back from New York in 96, I did a big party at my apartment up on 14th here. And we went to the American Legion because the Pagan Pancakes and a couple other bands were playing. And so that was the first time I really introduced her in Astoria. But she'd only come out around Halloween. And
What was that like the very first time? I mean, did you feel, was it, walk us through kind of what you were thinking, what you were feeling that first time.
Oh, I was freaked out. but I like had invited everybody over for a party, so I kind of went to the event with like 20 people, so I felt real safe mm-hmm. that way. And I dressed as Dolly Parton that year. And it was such a fun night, and I was blown away because people were more excited about it than they were terrified about it. Mm. And then the following year, they were doing, the Opry Company was having a big Halloween party, and they actually asked if I would help host it a little bit, like the costume contest and introducing the bands. And that year I went as Cher, and then it just kind of went from there. But then I left town for a while, and then mm-hmm. when I came back, we just started all over.
We were talking about, you know, things in your life that have taught you things, episodes of your life that have, you know, kind of highlighted things for you about the world or other people. What has Daylight taught you? Why is Daylight so important to you? And tell us a little bit about that.
She gave me the strength to remove the chip that I carried on my shoulder for most of my life, and I recognized that chip was also my shield of protection because of how I had to guard myself from living my life. And I think that when I tapped into her strength, that it brought me to my vulnerability as a human and made me more compassionate and patient and gave me ears to listen with and a heart to love with more. Hmm. And I just find that every time that I step out as daylight, I just really feel like I'm fluttering on the ground and just like in the most magical fairy tale.
And do you feel like when you are out as daylight, what's the response that you've noticed from people around you most often? I mean, do other people feel kind of lifted up by that energy that you're
kind of putting out
into
the world? I always just feel like I'm smothered in love and kisses when I step out as daylight, and it's so much fun. And no matter what the event is, be it performing at the Liberty or being at the block party or even when we do the story time at the library, I mean, it has just been the most beautiful thing, and I love it.
Yeah. I'm just curious, what do you think daylight has taught the rest of the community? Like, what do you think her effect has been on the people around you and other
community? I don't know. I mean, I've had several people say, I mean, my friends made these buttons. You can't see them on air, but it's the WWDD. It's got a rainbow and a sunshine and everything. What would daylight do? And it and we've just all been talking about it, because my main mission as a performer and as a human is to try to step forward with loving kindness and treating everyone nicely. And I think that it's a challenge too, especially when we want to react or we're upset about things, you know, and how do you breathe through that and step forward with kindness? And a lot of my friends have commented that that's one of the biggest takeaways that they've gotten from her, you know, is that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just thinking about, I know one of my friends, he always talks about you because he's into drag now too, but he always talks about how daylight gave him sort of not only just piqued his interest in drag, but it also kind of gave him more confidence going out into the world exploring himself and
I love that.
Drag. Yeah, so I think that has had a big effect on people, even if you don't see it yet. I've seen it in the school around me, which I think is meaningful to
it is.
People.
Yeah, and it was so fun because last Thursday I brought daylight to the high school for the cultural conversations. And
what was that like?
Amazing. I coined it my my largest step in my recovery from all of the abuse that I kind of endured there, and it just felt like a freeing moment. And the student that I was working with, Sophia, she was standing outside when I was driving up, and like she just got so excited and she started jumping up and down, and they like ushered me in, and there were a bunch of people standing around, and it was just like a lot of different faculty were coming over and thanking me for being there. And
did it feel like such a huge step because that was kind of unimaginable, you know, to you when you were a student at the high school?
Absolutely. And it was the third year that I had been invited to go and to be a storyteller at the conversations, which I've been so delighted to do every time. But, and I know I've mentioned it when I've gone to the Rainbow Club as well, is I still have anxiety attacks, like pulling into that parking lot and like walking through that building. And it's over 30 years ago, you know? Wow. And so, but that day it was so incredible. It was just such an incredible day. And, I had Jenny take my picture over by some of the stairs that I used to always get shoved down and stuff, you know, and just it just felt like a really powerful day for me. And,
what was the response like to the students and, just people there that you spoke to? You know, what was kind of the vibe in the room?
It was definitely charged. Like, you could tell there were people that were really excited and were coming by, and then there were a few more on the periphery that kind of were watching but keeping a comfortable distance and stuff. But the story time was really great, and people asked good questions, and I'm a hugger, so I always like to walk around the room and like thank people for giving me a moment to share some time with each other. And
So this idea of kind of trying to get the confidence to step outside and show who you are to the world each day. I was surprised to hear that, you know, this is a really daily and present thing that you need to do before you step out the door each morning, you know, to kind of try to step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
What's that like? I mean, you know, when you said, we were talking earlier and you said, you know, I've learned to that it's a good thing to challenge myself and step outside my comfort zone. I kind of thought you'd say, yeah, there are these moments occasionally in my life where I have to dig deep. And you surprised me when you said, no, this is a daily thing. Like I have a moment before I step outside my door. What's going through your mind in those moments? And
I'm like, okay, can I do this today? You know, can I go out there and like be myself and be grounded in who I am and keep my mind and heart open while I interact around the world, you know? Because, I mean, truth be told, like as many, I mean, I am grateful every day for the life I have. Like the fact that I get to be hugged and hug so many people every day while I'm walking down the street, it fills my heart. But at the same time, there are all those others, you know, the people that flip me off or like point their finger guns at me while I'm walking down Marine Drive to work. You know, it's all like, it's all that ebb and flow, you know, but we learn from the river. We have our high tides and our low tides and it is always moving, you know, and that's what we have to do. Just keep moving and keep being true.
I think it's a powerful thing for people to think about who don't have to do that, you know, because I think, there are people that have to take that moment before they step out the door each day. And then there are people that don't have to do that. And I think it's really important to recognize that not everybody just puts their coat on and runs out and gets in their car and starts their day. You know, there are so many people that to take on the day is in and of itself a really challenging thing that they have to rally for. And I think it, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of be more sensitive and understanding when you move through the world, when you recognize that, like, there are so many different types of people in the world and everybody comes at each day with a totally different mindset. And for some people, like, you know, it requires like centering oneself before they step out into the world. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, I appreciate you kind of sharing that perspective and talking about that.
So on another note, there's an event coming up in June that everybody always gets really excited about, and I think we should spend some time on it.
Pride in Astoria started in 2015.
Yeah.
And so it's the fourth year that we've been having Pride events here in town. What has it been like to watch that grow? I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. You know, it's been great, but tell us what that's been like.
It just has blown my mind. For when we first started it, it was our first year of having the Q Center, and I had a wild hair one morning when I was walking in the woods that it might be a really cool thing to try to do an Astoria Pride this year instead of doing Dragalution. And so I sent a text out to a group of friends and asked if they wanted to embark on this journey. And so they said yes, and so we had our first one, and that was so crazy because our first year, and it was so uplifting and just remarkable, and then the end of that Saturday night was the Pulse incident in Florida with you know, and so that next morning after being elevated like that, you know, we organized a vigil in the Guardian of Surgeon Waves and had this incredible, it was just like so many people. Yes. But everybody like coming in and like we gathered around and, at one point I had everyone like get in a huge circle and we just held hands and like breathed energy up and out and just sent it across the country to them. But it was just like, that was our first year. And it was like, so whoa. And then the next year we just, it just kept gaining more momentum and we had our, instead of being in the Armory for the gala, we got the Liberty Theater and we had a block party and it just keeps growing and growing. And I mean, this year we will have had the Mariah from season 3 of RuPaul's Drag Race is like our guest artist this year. And we have Poison Waters again from Portland, who always does such an amazing job. And then we have our local talent and stuff. And it's an amazing cultural celebration.
And as we kind of close here, I wondered if you could kind of give people just some highlights to look out for during Pride, things that they should keep on their radar. Are there events and things that, you want to kind of plug and let people know?
I mean,
about?
There's so much, you know, the interesting, I know there's a million thing things. Is that June is World Pride Month, mm-hmm. and stuff. And so, like, I think this year the headquarters is in New York. And they have stuff going on all year round. But we just have it for the weekend, second weekend in June always. But we have the gala on Friday night at the Liberty, and then we have the foot and bike parade on the waterfront at 11:30 on Saturday, which leads into the block party that goes all day down at the Barbie Center. And then we have the dance party at the Story Arts and Movement Center. And then we have a couple of artists that are actually being featured in Art Walk this year. Sid DeLuca has a show, and Audrey Long is doing a huge show of her ceramics.
Cool.
Yeah, and then Sunday there's the Unitarian service, and they're helping host a brunch at the Masonic Temple. And then Daylight closes us out reading at the Seaside Beach Books.
Wow. I know. Oh my gosh, there's so much going on.
So much going on.
I didn't realize it overlapped with the Art Walk. When you said second Saturday, I realized, they're happening at the same time.
We're hoping that some year, like, it will be all of the galleries will, like, do a queer-themed artist or something.
Oh, okay. That'd be cool. Have the entire Art Walk kind of oriented toward Pride.
But it takes a few years because they book so far out with their shows and stuff, but mm-hmm. it is starting to change a little bit, so it's cool. Kind of exciting. Cool.
Marco, thank you so much for coming in today to talk to us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So at this point in the show, I usually like to take the last couple minutes or so to kind of reflect as a student on what our speaker today had to say and kind of what their stories made me think of. So Marco has lived in Astoria for a while, and I've always known of him. I've just never really had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with him. And during this conversation, I reflected a lot on the fact that life really is not about pushing. It's about flowing. And Marco has been an excellent testament to that fact. He continues to spread his message of kindness, and that will be forever beneficial to our community. Between the time that we recorded this interview and I came back to edit it, I actually had the opportunity to watch the Pride Parade as it happened. And Marco's effect is obvious at that parade. Behind Daylight, you see a crowd of inspired people there to have fun, and that is something that would not have happened if Marco was not as strong as he was. And that brings me to another point. Each and every one of us have the power to change the lives of the people around us for the better. And if we wake up every morning and ask ourselves, how can I help the people around me, this world will not be as scary as it was yesterday. And we can build ourselves a truly unique and accepting community.